May it please the court, I'm Walter Sargent, registration number 17131. I represent the plaintiff and appellant Sylvia Simpson. The claims against Alex Hart have been settled and dismissed, so the only remaining claims are against Marla Maldonado. And the sole remaining issue on appeal is whether the trial court committed reversible error in admitting evidence that Sylvia Simpson had recently filed a federal lawsuit against her employer for racial or ethnic discrimination. This discrimination lawsuit was filed in July 2012, less than 3 months before the trial in this case. Simpson asserted she'd been denied a job promotion due to discriminatory animus and racial bias. She sought damages for, among other things, lost wages, lost benefits, loss of opportunity for promotion, loss of opportunity for professional growth. When Hart's counsel said she was planning to introduce the discrimination lawsuit into evidence, Simpson filed a motion in limine to preclude that evidence, and that motion was opposed by both Hart and Maldonado. The trial court initially granted the motion in limine, but on the request again of both Hart and Maldonado, the court reconsidered during trial and decided to permit defendants to question the witnesses about discrimination suit. Now, Simpson is not contesting the defendant's right to inquire into workplace difficulties. That might suggest an alternative cause for some or all of her injuries. Simpson's contesting the trial court's decision to allow questioning about the filing of the federal lawsuit itself. And the general rule on this issue is fairly straightforward. Evidence of prior litigation may be admissible if it's related to the present case. For example, in Bannock versus Thomas, the Supreme Court held that a plaintiff who was suing police officers for assault and battery could be cross-examined about a prior conviction that he had been resisting arrest in that very same occurrence, where he actually testified that he had not resisted arrest.
Mr. Sargent, I have a quick question for you. The fact that the lawsuit was filed, would that have some relevance as far as the degree of workplace difficulty? I understand that the litigation itself was irrelevant, but the fact that there was enough workplace difficulty to provoke the filing of a lawsuit, could the court not find relevance in the degree of difficulty?
Well, in fact, that was what the court, in responding to the motion for new trial, actually offered as its reason for allowing this evidence. The court said, Simpson's position, as he called it, that all of her emotional distress was caused by car accidents rather than her employment situation was could be found to be, quote, inconsistent with the idea of plaintiff feeling that a lawsuit was justified by the employment situation. And the court also said the fact that the unfavorable working conditions were thought to be bad enough to prompt the plaintiff to take the significant step of filing a lawsuit was admitted to allow the jury to evaluate how serious the plaintiff felt the situation was. First, I'll just note that Simpson never said that all of her emotional distress was caused by these two car accidents and none by the employment situation. In fact, when she was asked if she had suffered emotional distress, she said, what do you mean emotional distress? I was upset at some of the things that were said. But even if she had said that all of it was caused by the car accidents, there's nothing inconsistent about filing a discrimination lawsuit for reasons other than emotional distress. In this case, the discrimination lawsuit asserted that as a result of racial discrimination, she lost wages, she lost benefits, she lost opportunities for promotion and professional growth. Those are perfectly serious in and of themselves. To quote the court, to feel that a lawsuit was justified. And they have nothing to do with the injuries that are claimed in this case.
Well, Mr. Sargent, why could a jury not consider the factor of filing a lawsuit as to what you were just stating, as the anxiety was so great that it could have been caused by something other than the car accident?
I'm sorry, are you talking about the anxiety caused by the workplace?
The workplace anxiety, right. Go ahead.
Yeah, and we don't have any objection to questions about any anxiety or emotional distress that was caused to Ms. Simpson as a result of things that were going on in the workplace. It's specifically an objection to the introduction of evidence that Ms. Simpson filed a racial discrimination lawsuit shortly before this case went to trial.
All right, well, let me ask a follow-up question to that then. Could the jury not consider that factor, as I think as Judge Boris was saying, to the degree of the anxiety that it was serious enough that it could warrant a lawsuit? Why could a jury not consider that, especially in light of the fact that the court gave a limiting instruction saying that is the only purpose you can consider it for?
Well, again, the discrimination lawsuit was not merely alleging hurt feelings or emotional distress. It was alleging very concrete economic damage, and it would be extremely speculative for the jury to simply figure, well, she must have been feeling a lot of emotional distress, that's why she filed the lawsuit. And the court, in fact, did not allow the defense attorneys to go into any depth into the lawsuit. It really allowed them simply to introduce the fact that she filed a racial discrimination lawsuit against her employer. That's extremely prejudicial. Now,
so is your argument then probative versus prejudice, or such a lack of relevance that it rose to the level of abuse of discretion?
Well, it's a relevance claim, Your Honor. I think these cases are handled as relevance claims rather than 403 weighing cases. Regarding the limiting instructions, the limiting instructions, and I'll mention specifically jury instruction number 6, which is where you can find on the record. They say that evidence about possible workplace difficulties could be used only in determining whether there were reasons other than the car accidents that might have caused Simpson's injuries. But those instructions don't address the issue here, which is whether evidence of the discrimination lawsuit itself was admissible to show alternative causes for Simpson's injuries. And finally, I do want to emphasize that this error was prejudicial. Maldonado admitted that her negligence caused the car accident. The jury found that Simpson suffered injuries. All medical witnesses, including defendant's own independent medical examiner, testified that at least some of her injuries were caused by the Maldonado accident. It's not unreasonable to conclude that if the jury had not been provided with this inflammatory and legally irrelevant evidence about a racial discrimination lawsuit, that a jury might well have accepted the evidence that at least some of Simpson's injuries were caused by the Maldonado accident. And if that's true, then admitting the evidence was prejudicial error. I'd like to reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Excuse me. May it please the court, I'm John Levesack, and I represent Marlo Maldonado. Mr. Sargent stated, the issues have been narrowed significantly in the past week. The legal issue of the sudden emergency instruction is no longer part of this case. There is only the issue of the evidentiary ruling to admit the evidence of the federal lawsuit, a discretionary ruling that was a proper exercise of the court's discretion. Before I talk about that issue, I'd like to point out a glaring typo in my answer brief that I'm sorry for. On page 2 in the summary of argument, I wrote the sentence, there was error in admitting the evidence of the federal lawsuit. And it was so glaring that I didn't see the no is missing, so obviously we missed the no, and that should be included in that. Getting to this issue of this evidence, how did this issue come up? It's important because I represent Marlo Maldonado. Trial counsel for Ms. Maldonado had almost nothing to do with this issue. I say almost nothing because what he did was join in a request during the trial to be asked to allow questions about this. So let's just back up and see how this issue was raised and who raised it. So before trial, counsel for the plaintiff filed a motion in limine to exclude this. This was done about a week before trial. It was shortly before trial. Nobody responded to that in writing. So we don't know exactly what the positions of the parties were in writing. The certification under Rule 121 said that the counsel for the plaintiff had conferred with the defendants and both opposed. We don't know exactly the position other than that certification. Then, during the pretrial conference, a week before trial, counsel for Mr. Hart was not there. So the only two lawyers who were there were counsel for the plaintiff and Ms. Maldonado's trial counsel. And the plaintiff's counsel told the court, you know, I've got this motion in limine, and here's what I want to exclude, and, you know, it should be excluded. And the person who was objecting, or who wanted to do that, was not there. And Mr. Bockel, who's the trial counsel, said, I don't have a position on that one way or the other. So the judge said, okay, it's not coming in, and granted the motion in limine. Then during the trial, counsel for defendant Hart brought it up again. And she brought it up on the third day of trial, the 24th of October. And the court, she brought it up right at the start of the day, and the court said, we're gonna deal with this as it comes. You know, when it comes up during the testimony, we'll deal with it then. So then, during the testimony of a psychologist who had examined the plaintiff, a psychologist named Dr. Ricci, counsel for Mr. Hart renewed the request. She asked to examine him outside the presence of the jury, and she asked the court for leave to talk about the federal lawsuit. And the, you know, well into the discussion of whether that was going to take place or not, the trial judge basically said to Ms. Maldonado's counsel, are you going to join in this? And he said, yes, I will. That is the sum total of what counsel for Ms. Maldonado did in regard to this issue during the trial. He didn't participate in any questions of Dr. Ricci about the federal lawsuit. During the motion in limine discussion, not motion in limine, the request to during trial to ask about this, he did not say anything except, I joined in the request. Did not make arguments about that. He never brought up the federal lawsuit in questioning of any witness. He never brought up the federal lawsuit in closing argument. So with that background, I think it would be horribly unfair to require a new trial against a party who played almost a no role.
Mr. Levesque, let me ask about this. If indeed the evidence prejudiced the jury and caused them to basically return zero on damages, then wouldn't that have affected the verdict as concerns Ms. Maldonado, even though her counsel took basically a neutral position as far as whether the evidence should be admitted or excluded?
I agree with that point. It's possible that there could have been prejudice that worked to the benefit of Ms. Maldonado. But I would ask the panel to consider that in reviewing a discretionary order, that the reason why this issue came to light should be considered in deciding whether to require my client to go through another trial when we had almost no role in creating the issue.
I guess I've got one additional question. As far as the testimony of Dr. Ricci about the stress, it seems that there's a little bit of a connection problem in that the lawsuit wasn't filed until quite a bit of time after that examination occurred. So could you address that gap and arguable gap in relevance?
Yes. This is a case where the evidence by the plaintiff was that there were physical and emotional problems that began with the first accident in 2008, continued to the second accident in 2011, continued to the time of trial. There was testimony about ongoing problems. This is not a case where you've got something happened in, say, you know, 2008, it was fixed, it's solved within 6 months. So if this was that kind of a case where all the damages happened back in 2008 and there was nothing that went on into the future, that argument would have some traction. But this is a case that's much different. So Let me just refer to and quote from Dr. Ricci's testimony. This is from the October 24th transcript at page 51, and I'll just pick out phrases from his testimony. He was asked what his overall diagnosis was, and he said, this is an unresolved acute stress reaction. That's a way of describing the anxiety and depression issues, which simply means that it became a part of her now. It got consolidated, became an ongoing pattern and challenge that she had to deal with on an ongoing basis. And then he skip ahead a couple of lines. She also had ongoing pain patterns. So the plaintiff's theory of damages was that this was a ongoing problem. So if there was something that happened at any point during that ongoing stress-causing situation, that was relevant to what the cause of the damages were. So it is true that Dr. Ricci saw Mrs. Simpson before the federal lawsuit was filed. But his testimony was that stress plays a role in causing tension, and the tension and the spasms then cause pain. And if there's a visual illustration of that, I'd ask the panel to look at Plaintiff's Exhibit 19, which is in the record. And it was discussed during the direct examination by the plaintiff of Dr. Ricci to have him illustrate what his opinions were. And then it was also asked, crucially, during the cross-examination by Mr. Hart's counsel, leading up to the questions about the federal case. So that's a diagram that shows an accident causing pain, causing stress, muscle spasms, causing more pain. So the emotional distress is part of the circle that you see. So that was the theory of damages, was that the ongoing pain, which other witnesses had talked about, the chiropractor had talked about it, the pain doctor had talked about it, Dr. Rook and Dr. Rosenquist had talked about the pain. So you tie it together with what the psychologist said, which is the pain can cause the emotional problems, which can cause the stress and the tension, which then causes more pain. And as Dr. Ricci said, it's a vicious cycle.
Well, let me follow up with this question, because I think Mr. Sargent is not disputing that what you just discussed is relevant, but what he's saying is the filing of a racial discrimination lawsuit is not relevant. So can you address that piece?
Yes. Let me draw the distinction between testimony about stress at work. There's no dispute by any party that questions about stress at work would be okay. I think the word used in the response to the, or not the response, in the motion for new trial was, it's fair game. But what we're talking about is evidence that is relevant to the issue to show how bad that stress was. And so we've got, you can testify about, okay, I've got a stressful job, my boss is difficult to work with, and so on. But then it is relevant, especially when combined with these limiting instructions, to say this stress got bad enough that a lawsuit was filed. And then I'd also like to point out that Dr. Ricci testified that a lawsuit itself is stressful. So it is relevant in two ways. The fact that a lawsuit filed before trial is itself stressful and has some relevance to the claims of what the ongoing stress is caused by. And then it also illuminates the problem of the workplace stress.
There are three aspects of it that bother me. And again, I recognize your client was a small player in this theater, and no one's suggesting that she initiated this, but she's part of the picture now in terms of whether the plaintiff got a fair trial. In terms of raising the lawsuit, you have three things that bother me, if you have comment on them. One is that when the idea of filing a lawsuit against a town is a factor, people often hear, sometimes might infer, well, this is coming out of our pocket, she's suing our town. to the racial aspect, which creates so much emotion in people. The plaintiff is Hispanic, and there's just a lot of feeling often. And the third thing that bothers me is that it happened on the third day of trial. Not your fault, but the judge ruled in advance it was not coming in, which didn't give the counsel an opportunity. It seems to me they were blindsided, not your fault, but by the judge's change in the ruling. They could have voir dired. It might have changed the composition of the jury. And it might have affected whether they put on Dr. Ricci at all. Would you comment on those three concerns?
Yes, I'll try.
Thank you.
Filing a lawsuit against the town, this is all I know about the lawsuit. It was filed against the city of Fountain. This was a Colorado Springs jury. Fountain is just one town in Colorado Springs. We don't know whether there were jurors from Fountain. I have not reviewed the voir dire to determine whether there were questions about where the people resided. I think that if there was a concern in that regard, and also the second point that Your Honor mentioned about the racial aspect of this, the ethnic discrimination, the trial judge, I think, went over and above what a normal limiting instruction, how it's usually given. I mean, this judge gave four limiting instructions on exactly what the evidence should be considered for and what it should not be considered for. And he made it very clear to the lawyers in allowing the questions. He said, we're not going to retry this case. We're not going to get into the issues. We're not going to go there. So the judge did the proper thing to limit those improper issues from being used. They were not used. And so I think the limiting instruction cured those concerns. As far as the third day of trial, the question about the use of this testimony was raised on the morning of the third day of trial before Dr. Ricci testified at all. If you look at the argument by the plaintiff's counsel after the issue was raised, which was about 30 or 40 pages into Dr. Ricci's testimony, after the plaintiff had finished the direct examination, and then counsel for Hart said, you know, we've got some issues to bring up. In that discussion off the record, or not off the record, out of the presence of the jury, counsel for the plaintiff said, we were very careful in examining Dr. Ricci not to get into workplace issues. So I think that if there was some, you know, issue about not being prepared, the record shows that he actually was consciously and deliberately planning the examination of Dr. Ricci to completely stay away from that issue. So I don't think that it was a real, it was not a concern. So unless the panel has any more questions, I would just ask the court to affirm this proper exercise of discretion and to affirm the judgment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Sargent, you have about 6 minutes and 40 seconds left.
Thank you. I have a few points to address. First, and I think this has been discussed pretty fully, but whether Ms. Maldonado's counsel brought this issue into the case is irrelevant. We're not alleging that Maldonado's trial counsel did something bad. I frankly don't think Maldonado's counsel would have brought this in. And my thoughts about Hart's former trial counsel, I don't think need to be discussed. We're simply alleging that the trial court's admission of this evidence was improper and it resulted in an unfair trial. That's it. Now, regarding Dr. Ricci, he was asked a hypothetical question about whether filing a lawsuit can cause stress. Maybe it can. On the other hand, maybe it will alleviate stress by providing the plaintiff with a sense of empowerment. Here, there was no evidence, one way or the other, about whether Simpson, in this particular case, suffered stress by filing this lawsuit or anything else. There's no testimony whatsoever. And third, the Appellate's counsel said that this stress got bad enough that a lawsuit was filed. And again, I think I've discussed this, but I just want to emphasize. This woman filed a lawsuit, presumably, because she was denied a promotion on the basis of racial discrimination. And it's not because, she didn't file it because she was stressed. She filed it because she'd lost her promotion. She lost money, she lost benefits, she lost job opportunities. And that has nothing to do with stress. And finally, I just want to emphasize, as Judge Rothenberg brought up, this is, in fact, a racial discrimination lawsuit against the town. And that is, I think we can all recognize that that is a highly combustible thing to put into the middle of a trial, especially where the credibility of the plaintiff is such an issue. That's all I have to say.
Well, let me ask you, is the fact of filing a lawsuit and it without the racial discrimination being mentioned, would you be making the same argument?
Well, I think it still would go to litigiousness. I mean, all the cases indicate that litigiousness is a very serious allegation. Of course, it wasn't alleged here, but it's difficult to come up with any other legitimate reason, any other reason that this was introduced. So I would make some of the same arguments, but I think obviously, I mean, a racial discrimination lawsuit is something quite inflammatory.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, counsel, thank you for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.